Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Ambulances carrying injured Palestinians and foreigners with passports have begun crossing from Gaza into Egypt at Rafah for the first time since the Israel-Hamas war began. CBS's Robert Berger is in Jerusalem.
Officials say 400 to 500 foreign passport holders will be allowed to enter Egypt from Gaza today. Now, that's a big breakthrough since the Rafah border crossing has been closed to civilians since the start of the war more than 3 weeks ago. The hope is that some of the 400 Palestinian Americans trapped in Gaza will be able to get out.
There's growing outrage over an Israeli airstrike that killed dozens of people in a crowded refugee camp. The Israeli military says it also killed a key Hamas leader. Here in the U.S., the FBI has arrested a 21-year-old engineering major at Cornell University for allegedly making anti-Semitic threats against the campus Jewish Center and a dining hall. New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
This cruelty by New Yorkers against New Yorkers must stop.
Former President Trump's three eldest children begin taking turns on the witness stand at their father's civil fraud trial in New York City today. Donald Trump Jr. is expected to testify. His brother Eric will be there tomorrow, his sister Ivanka next week. All three were executive vice presidents of their father's company before Ivanka left to join her dad at the White House. The death rate for babies in the U.S. is up for the first time in a long time. CBS's Michael George.
New data from the National Center for Health Statistics show the infant mortality rate in the U.S. rose 3% from 2021 to 2022. It's the first year-to-year increase in 20 years.
Researchers believe more women giving birth are facing issues getting proper care. Many analysts believe the Federal Reserve will not raise interest rates again when they wrap up a two-day meeting later today. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
The Fed will likely be encouraged by the fact that inflation has drifted lower. As of last month, the consumer price index was up by 3.7% from a year ago, and core prices have also been coming down.
The Department of Education's fining the largest private Christian university in the country more than $37 million, claiming it falsely advertised the cost of receiving doctorates. Grand Canyon University President Brian Mueller has a problem with that.
They said this is not based upon student complaints. This is based on our reading of your website. Maybe the students ought to decide, right?
He claims the government's retaliating over the school's fight for nonprofit status. Dow futures off 100. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers is suing the Wisconsin legislature over pay raises denied to University of Wisconsin employees. A joint committee is holding up the pay raises, even though they'd been approved in the state budget by the full legislature and signed by the governor. Republican leaders called the lawsuit frivolous and said that it could hold up pay raises for other state employees. Evers wants the state Supreme Court to take up the case directly. Open enrollment under the Affordable Care Act begins tomorrow. People have until December 15th to sign up for a plan or renew their old plan in order to be covered on January 1st. Enrollment hit a record high earlier this year, and health insurance analysts expect the number to get bigger. In Wisconsin, thousands of people who were disenrolled from Medicaid this year are expected to drive demand. I'm Nate Wuggehoe, Civic Media News.
Craig Council is now a free agent. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. After 9 years as the Brewers' manager, Craig Council is now a free agent. His contract with the Crew expired yesterday. Reports say he has met with the Cleveland Guardians and now the New York Mets. Council earned $3.5 million in Milwaukee last season and is looking to significantly raise the bar on pay for Major League Baseball managers. The Rangers won 11-7 over the Diamondbacks last night in Game 4 of the World Series. Texas jumped out to a 10-0 lead, but the D-backs came back. The Texas Rangers Rangers now up 3-1 with Game 5 tonight at 7 o'clock in Phoenix. NFL, the Packers with a surprise move, trading defensive back Rasul Douglas to the Bills in exchange for a third-round pick in the draft. College football, the Badgers play against Indiana Saturday. Luke Fickle for an update on quarterback Tanner Mordecai's fractured hand.
I got no updates for you. You know, it comes down to a lot to what Tanner can do.
That's the Badgers' Luke Fickle. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 38. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows around 27. High of 45 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 23 degrees.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK, UK, UK.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
7:06 now on this Wednesday, November 1st. That's right, we have made it to November. Although I make it sound like that was an accomplishment, like we wanted to get to November, and I don't know anybody that looks forward to November. It's here, it's cloudy, it's cold, it is what it, in fact, I've got some 7 a.m. temperatures here. 19 here at Lake Wissota, 13 up in Hayward, 17 in Wausau. Green Bay's at 22, La Crosse 23, and Wisconsin Rapids at 18 degrees right now on this November 1st. I'm up here in Chippewa Falls. Greg Bach is down there in Waukesha, where I believe we have taken care of the gremlins.
Yes.
That had moved our signal hither and yon, and neither hither nor yon was the Civic Media app, but apparently we're back on there now, so I think people can hear, which I wrote a note yesterday when somebody inquired about the app, and I said, we will get this fixed. We have to get this fixed, because the only reason this show is any good is that my wife listens on the app as she drives to work, you know, and then she routes it through Bluetooth from her phone to her car radio. And if it weren't for her critiques, shall we say, this show would suck. So,
oh, honey, I have notes.
Yes. No, that's but I do appreciate that she listens in that way, and that the app is there, and you should be downloading the app, because that little gremlin aside, it is one handy way to catch all of our shows, catch some of the sports feeds as well. You can hear Greg later on in the morning when he's on As Goes Wisconsin. You are still doing double duty, right?
I am. Well, now I am co-hosting As Goes Wisconsin. Calvin here in Waukesha is doing the boards for that. But it's just having a lot of fun. Go right from this show into prep for the next one. Mm-hmm. Keep my day running.
And when is Kristen Bride due back?
We believe,
from her maternity leave.
Yeah, we believe that she's probably getting back either late December, mid-December, late December, or possibly just started clean at 2024. That's up for her to decide, and we'll know more about that as the weeks come along.
No, we're just glad that she's getting this time to enjoy the wee one. Whose name escapes me now?
Francis.
Francis. This was actually my pop quiz for you, just to see if you were paying attention to, you know, what. So I'm glad you and Jane are doing that, and glad that you're getting up early here to do the show with us. This is Native American Heritage Month, and it's a time to take note of the history of our Indigenous neighbors, build awareness of their contributions, their current challenges, and future opportunities in Native American communities. So we'll talk to educator Paul Ricken, who is one of the teachers that our Selena Heller speaks fondly of. And so Selena will join us as well to talk with Paul Ricken about Native American Heritage Month and other reasons why it's so important to focus on what you put in a school curriculum and make sure that it is accurate and helps raise us to be good thinkers and compassionate, empathetic people. By the way, if you missed our last hour or missed any of our past shows, including some of the glitches that we had in the last hour, here's the way to catch it. Subscribe to us as a podcast as well. Go to wherever you get your podcasts, and you can, whether it's Apple or Spotify, subscribe and listen on demand. Catch us later on that way. But that civicmedia.us website is also a place where you can catch some of our past shows. Also, Courier Newsroom puts together a series of newsletters. Courier Newsroom is the parent company of Up North News. We're a separate entity from Civic Media, but very happy to be in partnership with them 2 hours every morning here on the radio. You can find our work at upnorthnewswi.com. And again, our parent company, Courier Newsroom, has four different weekly newsletters that can help you follow political news around the states and around the country. And three of them are from people we have had on the show regularly or previously. First off, there is Stop the Presses. That's from Mark Jacob. You hear him on Friday mornings here. And that is a weekly newsletter about how right-wing extremism has exploited the weaknesses in American journalism and what we can do about it. So again, look for that Stop the Presses. There's also Frontlines, and that's by Kia Vakil, who we also hear on Friday mornings. Frontlines is a bi-weekly newsletter that will get you up to speed on the local political stories that you need to know from key states ahead of the 2024 election. Our friend Carolyn Fiddler has a newsletter that is a must-read called State House Action. It's all about the latest insider news from state capitals across the country, including Wisconsin. And finally, For What It's Worth is the title of the newsletter by Kyle Tharp. It's titled FWIW, For What It's Worth. It's a weekly newsletter that breaks down the digital spending strategy, tactics, and trends in our elections. Each week, we'll highlight whose online spending is up, whose is non-existent, and how campaigns, PACs, and advocacy groups are leveraging online platforms to affect social change and win political races. And so for all of those, go to couriernewsroom.com. That will take you, if you scroll down, not only to the newsletters, but also to all the various newsrooms, Up North News and the others that we have from all around the country in various states. President Joe Biden is headed to Minnesota. He's going to be visiting a family farm south of the Twin Cities and then holding a fundraiser featuring many of the state's top Democrats. It's all about demonstrating some political clout on the home turf of his new 2024 Democratic primary challenger, Congressman Dean Phillips. Biden plans to announce more than $5 billion in spending on adapting agriculture to climate change, expanding high-speed internet access in rural America, improving local infrastructure, and more. The money coming from the infrastructure and inflation reduction laws that were approved earlier in Biden's term. In fact, Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz penned a recent fundraising email on Biden's behalf titled, "Minnesotans Love Joe Biden. I have this to say about Minnesota. It's a great state, full of great people, and sometimes they do crazy things," Governor Walz wrote, "such as making political sideshows for themselves," with a very direct ding at one of the Twin Cities area congressmen. Prominent Black Democrats have been slamming Dean Phillips for focusing his early campaign on New Hampshire, which is overwhelmingly white, in defiance of the new 2024 Democratic primary calendar that has South Carolina going first. New Hampshire's primary is going to be held in January ahead of South Carolina's, but it is not sanctioned by the Democratic National Committee. Biden won't appear on its ballot. Any votes that he gets will be write-ins. Dean Phillips is hoping for a symbolic victory because with Joe Biden not on the New Hampshire ballot, and he had finished fifth there back in 2020, you'll recall, Dean Phillips is hoping to show some kind of strength, but then South Carolina is going to come along and do for Biden what it did in 2020, show broad and diverse strength, and probably snuff out the Dean Phillips campaign before it gets a lot of traction. Pennsylvania Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, who worked with Phillips as a member of the allegedly centrist Problem Solvers Caucus, said she has an enormous amount of respect for Dean, but feels as though his likely platform would be very similar to Biden's agenda and the things that he's already accomplished in his first 2 years in office. Houlihan said, "I don't see a real differentiation." She called the Phillips campaign a distraction at a time when Democrats should be unified in backing President Biden. So when he's there today and he's presenting that $5 billion in spending, you can just envision him putting on those aviator sunglasses, looking into a camera, knowing that he's looking right at Dean Phillips and saying, "How do you like me now?" So look for some video from Minnesota from the Biden campaign that you're sure to see in the coming days and weeks ahead as they continue advertising heavily in battleground states, including Wisconsin. It's time to check the forecast now at 7:15 as we head into November. This first day, it is a cold one. There's no other way to put it. Let's find out how long the cold will linger and what a recovery looks like. And here's a hint. It ain't the 70s anymore. Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology tells us more. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, like you said, it's going to be a cold one overall. Today, it looks like partial sunshine developing for most today. Some sunshine expected around Oshkosh and Waukesha. Mid-30s to low 40s across the board, well below average for this time of the year. We should be seeing temperatures around the low to mid-50s instead. Thursday, sunshine for most, a little bit more cloud cover around Richland Center. Mid to upper 40s for Wisconsin Rapids southward, upper 30s to low 40s Wausau over to Amory and Baldwin. To round out the work week on Friday, it looks like a warm front starts to come through. Cloudy skies for all, low to mid-50s for southern Wisconsin. So more of an average forecast for those locations. Mid to upper 40s for everyone else. A slight chance for a few spotty rain showers late Friday night. Madison over towards Milwaukee. For the weekend, Saturday, cloudy for all. A slight chance for some rain in the afternoon around west central Wisconsin, then a chance for rain by Saturday night for everyone else. Similar temperatures to Friday, low to mid-50s for southern Wisconsin, mid to upper 40s once again for everyone else. Then by Sunday, it looks like a slight chance for rain for almost everyone for the daytime hours. Just cloudy skies expected from Oshkosh to Waukesha and Wisconsin Rapids. Temperatures, once again, pretty similar, mid to upper 50s for southern Wisconsin and mid to upper 40s from Oshkosh northward.
So not that long ago, we all would have thought highs in the 50s were some kind of punishment. They will instead be some kind of relief compared to highs in the 30s. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much. You too.
Nice to have you along here. And again, if you missed it earlier, those 7 o'clock temperatures include Park Falls now at 14 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids was 18. Wausau 17. Hayward 13. Here on Lake Wissota, it's 19 degrees, 21 in Madison and 21 in Waukesha as well. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has agreed to consider possibly taking up directly the lawsuit that seeks to strike down the taxpayer funding for private voucher schools. That's the lawsuit filed by Julie Underwood. We had her on the program recently and supported by Kirk Bangstad's Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC. The court yesterday gave Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and other targets of the lawsuit 2 weeks to file a response as to why the court shouldn't take up the case until after it's been heard by a circuit court and then an appeals court. Right-wing justices Rebecca Bradley and Annette Ziegler dissented, saying that, in essence, the matter of school vouchers is already settled law. Where have I heard that before? Right-wing justices saying that it's already settled law. We don't need to consider it. Anyway, the lawsuit says the voucher school programs violate the Wisconsin Constitution's public purpose requirement because they require local school districts to spend significantly more per pupil on private schools than on public schools. Their funding mechanisms are designed to destructively defund public schools. They don't provide adequate oversight of private schools. They don't require private schools to meet adequate educational standards, and they don't require the private schools to provide essential services to all students. So we'll find out in a couple of weeks if the Supreme Court takes up that challenge directly. Back with more after this. This is Up North News Radio.
The Shaw, WAUK.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
There is promised one more from Abbey Road. The album hit number one on this day in 1969. Hey, the Bucks are playing tonight at Toronto, their first road game of the new season. 6 p.m. tip on several Civic Media radio stations, including News from the Center and Richland Center, Oshkosh Air Support, Lake Air in Amory, WRJN in Racine, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, and WCQM in Park Falls. Then the Knicks will, or the Bucks will play the Knicks at home on Friday at Fiserv Forum. Badger volleyball team 20-1 on the season, number two ranked team in the country. They're in action tonight, 6 o'clock against Purdue. That'll be on the Big Ten Network. Texas Rangers could win the World Series tonight in Arizona. They've won the first two games in Arizona, winning last night 11-7, and now lead that series 3-1. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee met yesterday. They did not take up what they should be taking up in the fall legislative session, and that would be Governor Evers' proposal to use a $7 billion surplus, use a part of it to help child care providers stay open. Instead, Republicans took up their own bill that replaces Governor Evers' entire workforce development bill with instead more than $2 billion in tax cuts, once again geared toward the wealthiest Wisconsinites, and also boosting the amount that a parent can deduct from their taxes to send their kid to private school, because of course they did. But if Republicans can keep playing their greatest hits, or greatest hit, because the only policy seems to be giving tax cuts to the rich, well, then Democrats at the state capitol on Tuesday figured out, hey, why not drop the needle and play their own greatest hits? And that's fine, because the comparison works in their favor. So what's the Dems' greatest hits? Well, it's more affordable health care, first and foremost, by having Wisconsin finally accept the Medicaid expansion, which would strengthen Badger Care and help working families who otherwise face bankruptcy whenever something bad happens medically. So Democrats yesterday reintroduced their Healthy Wisconsin package of bills. There's the one bill to expand Badger Care, one that would provide a public option for people to buy into Badger Care, one that could lower prescription drug prices by making their costs more transparent to consumers, and one that would cap the cost of insulin. There's just been so much money wasted by Republicans for more than a decade because of their temper tantrum that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, passed and is helping so many Americans that, in fact, in 40 states now, they have accepted the increased federal funding to cover more people through their Medicaid programs. Medicaid in Wisconsin is known as Badger Care. According to Citizen Action, in this budget period alone, Wisconsin Republicans are turning down $2.2 billion to help more working families get health care coverage. And paying what is effectively a penalty of another $1.6 billion by getting less federal reimbursement for regular Medicaid patients than we'd get if Republicans would just stop being one of the 10 states left to stubbornly deprive their constituents of affordable health care and leave them vulnerable to bankruptcy because of medical debts, which I will say again is something you see in no other developed country in the world, quite like this. This was a no-brainer a decade ago. It remains a no-brainer now. And while this is entirely a Republican-created problem, while this is entirely the fault of the Republicans for costing Wisconsin billions and billions of dollars, and while it's entirely the fault of Republicans for the lack of affordable health care options for so many in Wisconsin, it is still maddening just the same that Democrats and progressives can't seem to get that message through to enough people in Wisconsin to say, do you have any idea how fiscally reckless Wisconsin Republicans are? Do you have any idea how many billions of dollars they've wasted, primarily by the Medicaid expansion money that they're not taking, but in a host of other ways? You know, for example, all of the legal costs from the legislature having to hire private attorneys to defend themselves against indefensible things like, you know, rigging the political maps. The cost of the voucher schools program, which is now about $500 million a year, money that could be going to strengthening our public schools instead of trying to demolish them. There's just no shortage of ways in which the Republican record is clear on just how bad they are as stewards of Wisconsin taxpayers' dollars. And that's a message that Democrats and progressives will again try to push through in 2024, while Republicans push through, well, if you just give some more tax cuts to rich people, I guess somehow it will trickle down. But Republican lawmakers are now facing a lawsuit from Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call. They filed the lawsuit yesterday over a process that allows a small committee of legislators to essentially block something that the full legislature had already approved and something that the governor had already signed. And if you want details on it, head over to upnorthnewswi.com. It's the story that I've written on our homepage right now. And it explains how exactly it happens that the whole legislature can pass a bill, the governor can sign it, but then before some of the specific parts of the bill get implemented, the legislature requires approval by either the Joint Finance Committee or one of these obscure committees called JCRAR, the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules, or the Joint Committee on Employment Relations, and all of these little things where a small group of legislators can say, you know, no, we actually don't want to do that. We want to put a block on that particular part of implementation. And they shouldn't be able to do that. Once a bill is signed into law, it's up to the executive branch of government to implement it. The legislative branch has already done their job. So you might ask, well, why did the legislature create these rules committees in the first place? Essentially, to be a caretaker to ensure that a governor and that the executive branch is following the will of the legislature in implementing it. Essentially, to be a resource to say, well, here's what we meant when we were, you know, passing this into law. But Republicans are now abusing that process, that rulemaking process, and saying, well, for example, we know the state budget bill has pay raises for all state employees, but because we don't like how the University of Wisconsin system is spending some of its money for diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're going to freeze the pay raises just for UW system employees. They can't do that. That's not what the state budget bill said, and that's part of what the lawsuit is about. But it just, again, shows how Republicans are abusing the norms that we have had in democracy for a long period of time. The most recent example coming a couple of weeks back when the state Senate Republicans fired 8 different appointees of Governor Evers. They were supposed to confirm those appointments years ago. But by abusing the process and not confirming them and not holding the vote until maybe they feel like firing them, that's never the way the process was supposed to work. Again, our system is crying out for political reform. Shouldn't have had to be that way, but the bad faith actions of Republican legislators have made it necessary. Back to talk about American Indian Heritage Month after this. You're up north.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report.
Injured Palestinians and foreigners are finally being allowed out of war-torn Gaza. CBS's Linda Gradstein has details from Jerusalem.
Some 400 foreign passport holders and dual nationals are expected to leave Gaza after Egypt opened the Rafah crossing for people for the first time since the war between Israel and Hamas began on October 7th. Some 80 seriously wounded Palestinians will also get life-saving medical treatment in Egypt. Until now, the Rafah crossing has been opened only for humanitarian aid to enter Gaza.
Israel is defending growing criticism over a strike on the crowded Jabalia refugee camp. The military's Jonathan Conricus.
We took precautions to minimize collateral damage, but the military aim was achieved.
That, he says, was killing a key Hamas leader. Gaza plunged into another internet and phone outage as Israeli troops battle Hamas today. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin's largest utility companies say they plan to end using coal as a fuel source sooner than they had expected. We Energies and the WEC Energy Group announced Tuesday they plan to stop using coal by the end of 2032. They had originally anticipated needing to use coal until 2035. They say they're moving up that date after they increased investments into renewable energy sources by over $1 billion. More teenagers are getting jobs in Wisconsin. The number of young people applying for work permits went up by 27% between 2019 and last year. That represents more than 37,000 workers. Republican lawmakers are trying to eliminate work permits. They say they're an unnecessary burden. On the other hand, fees from work permits pay for enforcing labor standards in Wisconsin. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Partly cloudy skies today with highs around 38. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows around 27. High of 45 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Shaw, WAUK. Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK. K.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
getting deep, but I keep digging. Wondered if anybody's even listening, cause it's getting hectic.
This is November getting underway today. It is American Indian and Alaska Native Heritage Month. It's a good time, as has happened in other months, to take stock of history, but also current opportunities and current challenges. And so Up North News reporter Selena Heller had a great suggestion for an educator with a long history of developing curriculum. About the importance of implementing cultural and historical viewpoints in school districts when it comes to our Indigenous communities. Paul Ricken has been recognized for many things, but one is his integration of American Indian studies into his instruction and then providing the frameworks for other schools to follow. And so Selena Heller and Paul Ricken, welcome to you both. Good morning.
Thank you and good morning.
Nice to have you both here. Selena, I'm going to start with you because you had such glowing things to say when you suggested Mr. Ricken as somebody to talk about American Indian Heritage Month. Why was that the case? Why is that the case?
Oh, my goodness. Mr. Ricken, my former teacher, is just a wonderful example of somebody who cares about his students and the community as a whole, and really wants to spend time looking into things that really matter and matter to the community and to the students. And so he was just, and still continues to be, a well-respected person in the community. And we're happy to have him here this morning and honored.
Well, let me double check that. Mr. Ricken, this would be your chance to say, I don't really know who this person is. I have no memory of a student like this in my past. You want to defend Selena here, Paul?
Selena was a great student. And that goes back a long way now. I guess I won't try to...
Hear that, Selena? A long way.
Among other things, I'll just mention, she was a member of our mock trial team back in the early 90s, I guess it would be, and did a phenomenal job. And it was clear that she had a future in journalism at that point. She also was a speaker for our model Congress that we did. And so we had a lot of fun together. And I would say this to a lot of people you see, but in Selena's case, it's absolutely true. She hasn't changed a bit.
I can attest. Yes. I mean, I worked with her 20 plus years ago. Hasn't changed a bit. Now, I joke about how, you know, that many more years has passed. And she, like our former co-anchor, Judy Clark, is just one of those disgusting people that doesn't seem to age. They got that Dick Clark gene. So I
don't know about that.
You may feel older, but yeah, you haven't changed a bit, Selena. We're glad to have you here as well. Paul, let's turn to the topic at hand here. And again, now we do this throughout the course of the year, whether it's, you know, Hispanic Heritage, Black History Month, we do one for women, and it needs to be so much more than just a cosmetic, you know, token of recognition. So can you say in your own words the importance of making sure we set aside time to deal with other cultures, genders, whatever the case may be. In this case, for our Indigenous community, what's the importance of taking time to talk about a topic like this?
Well, you know, the first thing I would say is that you're bringing up a good point, which is we really shouldn't have to have monthly designations like this, right? And one of the things that I used to, and I still do in my classes, is have the kids actually debate that from a historical point of view, why we do it. I guess there's good arguments in either side of it, right? On the one hand, it helps us appreciate and understand an area of our history that may have been ignored previously. And it gives us a chance for a month to really highlight some things. On the other hand, it shows that kind of weakness that we have within our regular flow of history curriculum. So that's really a good place to kind of start with that whole discussion. And of course, in Wisconsin, the Native story of Wisconsin is absolutely essential to the history of the state. You really can't understand Wisconsin history without understanding the Indian country portion of that history. And so we need to get past what some refer to as the iceberg theory of approaching this, where we sort of take bits and pieces of cultural things, food and dance and that type of thing. We need to get much deeper into the history so that people really understand the role that Native people have played in our history.
And speaking to that, I know it, with our school, it's different and growing up in our community, because that was so ingrained in us. And we know those things. Like, we had powwows in our school on a regular basis. We had fry bread served at lunch. And in talking to other kids, it was weird to think, you don't have those things. So it's quite a different across the board for schools. So it's not always the same. We're not learning the same things.
Absolutely true. One of the arguments that I make every time I have the opportunity, so I'll do it now, is that I think every high school in the state of Wisconsin should teach the history of the tribal nation that is closest to it. And if we did that, we would go a long way in fulfilling the original intention of the laws that were collectively known as Act 31.
And I know one of the things that you like to do in your classes is have the students each talk to an elder. And what an experience that is, and what a kind of a learning treat for them. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's true. And that's true for both not Native and non-Native students, because of course I have both in my classes. The reason we do that is to, it goes into the whole area of what we call elder epistemology, which is, epistemology is a fancy word for ways of learning, ways of knowing. And within First Nations people, elder history is incredibly important. And that gets into a whole area of what we think of as oral history, which is absolutely bedrock when you're talking about First Nations people. And a lot of times oral history isn't thought of as being as legitimate as what we would think of as sort of a Western-based, document-based history. And of course, that's a fallacy. And oral history is incredibly powerful, and is one of the ways in which we really understand First Nations people. I like to have both the Native and non-Native kids do it, because I think kids just don't take enough time, I think. And, you know, I don't know if I did either when I was 16 years old, but to talk to people that are older in their families, I think it helps them understand their family history so much better.
Paul, why, when we talk about teaching history, we see this pushback from folks that say that to teach a more comprehensive, I would say a more honest view of history, is somehow going to teach students to hate their own culture, that to learn about Black history means they're going to hate themselves as white people. And the same goes for Native American history. And while I can argue against that point all day, I'd rather hear from you about what it is about teaching an honest account of history that actually strengthens students in a majority group rather than a minority one.
Yeah, absolutely true. When I was an undergraduate way back in the 1970s, one of the things that the history professors that I was working with at the time, they would stress to me, is history is about the pursuit of truth, wherever that leads you. And the truth, is very powerful. And the American story is an incredible story. There are so many strands to that story. And unfortunately, from the very beginning of our history, for a number of reasons that would take a long time to talk through, that story tended to come from one point of view. And I think one of the things that people get kind of hung up on in this is that they want to have one agreed upon story of the American past, and there isn't one. There are, competing narratives when you start talking about American history. And I think that in Black River Falls, when we really got going on this in the early 90s, I always tried to keep that center to what we were doing, that we're just trying to teach a fuller version of the past, and including our own community. And in doing that, we're going to help the kids, and this is really the key point, we're going to help the kids understand the present situation better. It has nothing to do with trying to make people feel bad about something that happened 150 years ago, which they have absolutely no control over. That isn't the idea. You don't do a good job teaching First Nation studies by coming at it from a standpoint of white guilt. That isn't the approach that works. And so it's just a fuller version of the past, and I think one that helps everyone appreciate each other's story.
And a lot of communities now are more, do you find them more adopting all of these practices that you've been kind of trying to encourage over all of these years?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think one of the things that's always been a challenge with Act 31 and the integration of this information is that there haven't been good ways to really measure it. And in some respects, when the state came forward with this, and really, if I could just take a moment on this, the state, the legislature in the 89-90 biennium came forward with a series of laws known as Act 31. And it was really in response to what was happening up in the northern part of the state related to Ojibwe treaty rights. And there's a long history to that. There's been a lot of great work done on that history and how that happened. But the point being, it's hard to measure the effectiveness of this in schools. And that's always been a great challenge, and it still is a challenge today. So I don't really have a great answer for that. I will say this, the materials that are available, the resources that are available, are absolutely light years ahead of where we were 33 years ago when we got started with this. And so from that standpoint, and from, I guess, anecdotal evidence and talking to people, I think there's much greater awareness in 2023 than there was in 1990.
You know, we still have the occasional debate over, I don't know if the right term is cultural appropriation. For example, in Osceola, they just restored an old, larger-than-life Indian statue, mm-hmm. you know, a stereotypical symbol. And again, all of the time spent debating that symbol seems to me it takes time away that we could be proactive and learning and moving forward and learning more about our neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are incredibly emotional issues for people when it gets down to the community level in that way. And we see that, of course, where we have seen that over and over again with the mascot debate in schools. And I agree with you that we get caught up in those debates sometimes at the expense of the bigger picture of what's going on. But I would also argue that those debates reflect the lack of work that's been done within history in our schools. You know, I know that's a hazard of my profession that I see everything in those terms. But I think if we taught better history, those debates might be different.
I've got over a minute left, and a text just came in from Matt in Germantown. So I'm unfairly giving you about 30 seconds to answer. As an adult, how can we learn more about and get involved in promoting cultural awareness about Native and other groups? So outside of the history lessons at school, what can we do in the community? What's one thing we could do?
Yeah, I think two things. One, read. There's a lot of great works of literature out there now. There's a lot of great historical works that help us with this. And number two, I think it's talk to people. I think we've gotten to a point in our society where that's become so difficult. We've turned into the kind of this social media world. I think just talking to neighbors and working with neighbors, and that's something that we really worked hard on in Black River. We incorporated a lot of the Ho-Chunk people within the work that we were doing in the school, and I think that's so important.
Very much so, and clearly getting an alum like Selena Heller out of this shows you must be doing something right here. So thank you again so much, Paul Ricken. Selena, thank you for bringing Mr. Ricken along. We've learned a
My
lot.
Pleasure.
Hope we get to chat again soon, Paul.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Selena, you have a good day. Looks like you and Emery have recovered well from trick-or-treating.
Yeah, we're thawed out.
Getting there. All right, thanks, you guys. Have a wonderful day. When we come back, Todd Alba from the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will join us next. You're up north.
This is the Shaw, WAUK.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself.
We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
This is specifically for Todd Alba. We've been mentioning Jimmy Steinman's anniversary of his birth. Holding Out for a Hero from Footloose was one of those anthems. Bring it up, Greg. Where indeed have all the good men gone, and where are all the gods? Where's the streetwise Hercules? Tell you where he is. He's in Madison, Wisconsin at Civic Media. Todd Alba. He's on from noon to two. We're holding out for Todd as our hero.
Oh, you can wait a while longer, because usually my intro song is It's Raining Men. Hallelujah.
He's also known as the Todd Father. So
the Todd Father. Yes. Nice.
Yeah. Nick Ramos from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign came up with that one yesterday.
Yeah, very that nice. Was wonderful.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm well. How about you guys?
We're doing good. You know, this cool. is day three of the new setup with the new lineup and the new the new routing of the show. So we're getting there.
I can't be in the studio anymore here. And I have to be at my desk. At
yes.
my little desk.
Well, actually, that's kind of nice, though, because it highlights that the new Civic Media, you know, headquarters has the your state capitol right there over yes. your left shoulder.
Yes, so, right behind us here on the square.
Right there with all the movers and the shakers. It's been it's a very good deal. So what have you been talking about lately?
Well, yesterday we had Nick Ramos on from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and talked a little bit about the sham that is the Republican legislature right now on trying to push through this bill on redistricting, and pointed out the fact that really it's really disingenuous, because President Kapinga himself of the Wisconsin State Senate says, yeah, by the way, that bill that Voss wants to go through on redistricting, we don't have the votes. So, you know, disingenuous at best on there. So we talked a little bit about that. And then today we're going to talk about, we're going to go a little bit national, but bring it home a little bit and talk about yesterday afternoon it was announced that the Commandant of the Marine Corps had a heart attack. And mm-hmm. part of that is because they believe, because he has been working so hard and doing two or three jobs, because of this lack of having all these appointments confirmed by the U.S. Senate, and Tommy Tuberville predominantly, and the Republicans are holding this up. But, you know, none of the U.S. senators are stepping forward to try to break these Senate rules to try to get these appointments through. So I'll talk a little bit about that and see where it goes from there.
All right. I want to pick up where I was mentioning something in the last segment here, talking about American Indian Heritage Month. Yeah. And I was working on a story that will be in the Up North News daily newsletter, I think tomorrow. And it's about what's happening out in Osceola, which is on the Minnesota border there, just mm-hmm. west of Amory, where there had been a slightly larger than life statue up of, you know, of an Indian, very stereotypical, you know, with the arms folded and the big feathered headdress and the loincloth and the moccasins, but otherwise he's naked. And, you know, it was up for years. Then it had to come down for a while because of some nearby building demolition. And then they debated whether to put it back up. And ultimately they did. And one of the women who was, you know, leading the charge to put the statue back up said, well, I asked people on Facebook, and like 98 or 99% of people said that Indian statue should go back up. And yeah. kids, that's why we don't do scientific polling over Facebook of your friends and other like-minded people, because yeah, there are a couple of people that like having that statue there. There's also a couple of more that are just downright embarrassed that that's back up in their hometown. And, you know, it's a shame that we have to be debating things like this and the tomahawk chop and mascot names over and over again.
I think it goes a little bit to what we were talking about yesterday on the show, which is this whole diversity, equity, and inclusion issue. Robin Voss has made it an issue. I heard you talk about that earlier this morning, Pat, on holding back these pay raises, which are pretty much illegal. The governor is suing over this. I think part of this is that Republicans currently, and I was Republican for 30 years, left the party in 2011, they like to play on people's fears. And we fear what we don't know. And probably one of the most rewarding opportunities I ever had in my legislative or congressional career as a staffer was when my former boss, Dale Schultz, state senator, sat on the Legislative Tribal Relations Committee. And what it was comprised of folks in the legislature of Wisconsin, and then there is a tribal legislature. For those that don't know, there's a legislature of all the different tribes in Wisconsin. And Dale would go around, they'd host different reservations across the state of Wisconsin, usually sometimes in Madison, and sometimes Dale couldn't go and I'd go. And it was a great opportunity for me as a kid who grew up in a town of 5,000 people, predominantly 98% white, to hear the stories of folks who came before me and the Native American stories. And probably one of the coolest things that I ever was a part of was my former boss, Dale Schultz, was one of the few Republicans to vote in favor of banning Native American mascots in schools across Wisconsin. And to your point, Pat, a lot of folks on Facebook, they don't think that they know anybody who is a Native American or has Native American heritage. They probably do. But they don't understand the culture. They don't understand this. You know this very well, Pat. When Walker, Governor Walker, pillaged the environmental laws up north to try to get in mining, which, of course, never resulted in any jobs. But it attacked environmentally these rice fields that are, it's like the for Native Americans in that part of the state, that's like their church. Mm-hmm. And this attacked their heritage, their culture, their religion. And until you understand the culture, until you listen to people who are experiencing this, you don't understand. And so you're fearful of it. And unfortunately, it appears that people just, you see things on cartoons and all this stuff, and that's what you think, quote unquote, Indians are or Native Americans, and you don't understand the history and the value and the tradition.
Here's what gets to me is when people say, well, we're doing this as an honor, you know, as a sense of reverence.
Really.
It's still not your symbol to use.
Exactly.
It's not for yours. And here's the punchline on that particular statue. Does this thing go back like 100 years and, you know, people just didn't know any better or whatever? According to the Osceola newspaper, that statue went up in the early 1990s. When we were already pointing out what, you know, the tomahawk chop and other mascots. So it's not like there's some kind of time excuse on this either, which again, if you want to say this comes from a place of reverence and honor, then do just what you said and talk to your indigenous neighbors, your Native American communities, and learn, and you'll figure out that this isn't really the way for you to go.
Yeah. There's such a rich, of course, you know, they were here first, right? There's such a rich heritage of Native Americans, and it's integrated into our lives, and we just don't know it because unfortunately, sometimes it's never taught, or sometimes we don't listen.
Yeah. And we need more of that. And to do that, you can listen to Todd Alba weekdays from noon to two.
Yeah.
And you can catch Mr. Bach on As Goes Wisconsin starting at 10 o'clock. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you both.
All right. You guys have a great day. All right. That's going to do it for us tomorrow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, Joe Zepecki, Luke Mathers, all going to be along with us. Remember that you can follow us all day long on the socials, Up North News WI. You can also sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can follow me. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter, Threads, Instagram, and TikTok. All right. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.